The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
The Honorable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hereby give notice that on a future day I shall move the adoption of the following resolution. Whereas Jessica Robichaux, 19, of Yarmouth, participated in the On the Tip of the Toes Foundation sailing venture, and whereas Jessica was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2002, whereas this foundation serves the double purpose of teaching persons to sail and of learning to move on after being ill with cancer, therefore be it resolved that the members of this House of Assembly congratulate Jessica Robichaux on her tenacity and her achievement and wish her all the best for the future. Mr. Speaker, I ask for waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? It is agreed. Would all those in favor of the motion please say aye. Contrary minded, nay. Motion is carried. Barring no more notices of motion, we'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 1:13 and we'll conclude at 2:43. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, as you know, the Wheeler Report called for more research into the issue of shale gas development, something we all agree on. Well, let's take a look at the research, Mr. Speaker. A few short years ago, the province of Saskatchewan faced exactly the same problems that Nova Scotia has today. They had a large debt, they had a declining population, their young people were moving away, mostly to Alberta, which is right next door. They had high unemployment and their small towns were shrinking. That would sound familiar to all Nova Scotians. They had a choice. They could put up a close for business sign on their province, or they could get serious about natural resource development. As we all know, Mr. Speaker, they chose development. In the last year, we learned yesterday that Nova Scotia lost 8,700 jobs. Saskatchewan, a similar sized province, actually gained 19,000 jobs at the same time. They'll ask the Premier. If the Premier of Saskatchewan is able to show real leadership and safely develop shale gas and the jobs that go with us, why can't Nova Scotia's Premier?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the Honourable Member for his question. We're going to continue. What we've been doing, Mr. Speaker, the last year is building support across this province to provide government to Nova Scotians in a sustainable way. What we've laid out before this House, and the Minister has been debating this and talking about this, is doing exactly what the Wheeler Report has asked us to do, which is to do further study to ensure that we do more engagement with communities across this province, and that's exactly what we're going to do, Mr. Speaker. And what we're going to do is provide the private sector with the knowledge of whether or not we actually have that resource or not.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, we could argue about whether the government is following the Wheeler Report or not. In fact, we've had that debate. But one group the government should be following is the people of Nova Scotia themselves, who are crying out for more jobs in the face of such significant loss of jobs, Mr. Speaker. In the first four months of this year, Mr. Speaker, the population of Saskatchewan actually went up by 5,085 people. In that same period, Nova Scotia said goodbye to 1,196 of our fellow citizens. They went up and we went down, and I will table that, Mr. Speaker. To quote directly from the Premier of Saskatchewan about their experience with shale gas development, I will read. Here are the incidents that we found. Our kids are coming home. They are starting new businesses. We have jobs being created for young people. And we have a broader tax base in which we can afford education and health care. Those are the words of the Premier of Saskatchewan. Now, what Nova Scotian family wouldn't want that, Mr. Speaker? So I'll ask the Premier, if banning a new way of creating new jobs, like shale gas development, is such a good idea for Nova Scotia, what's Saskatchewan doing wrong?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to remind the Honourable Member that we are not, Mr. Speaker, in any way banning anything in this province. What we're doing is doing exactly what the Wheeler Report has asked us to do, which continue to do more science, Mr. Speaker, understand whether or not we actually have that resource, Mr. Speaker, and that good work is ongoing in the Department of Energy. But in the meantime, Mr. Speaker, we made an announcement today, the announcements today in and around the investments on research grants to university students across this province, providing them with their first job opportunity here in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, we've received resounding support from the private sector when it came to broadening the apprenticeship opportunities to keep more young people in this province, Mr. Speaker. It's not as simple as the leader of the Conservative Party would like to make it, Mr. Speaker. The reality of it is this province and this government is going to continue to work with the private sector to drive good economic opportunities and at the same time put in place public policy that will ensure that our way forward is a sustainable way, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the fact of the matter is the government is banning a new way of creating new jobs. They're banning high-volume hydraulic fracturing. We have yet to see the definition, but that is what they're doing. But it's actually much more than that, Mr. Speaker. They're banning a chance for Nova Scotians to work here at home. They're banning a chance for Nova Scotia families to be united in one province, their home province, working at real jobs with real opportunity. They're banning, Mr. Speaker, future prosperity or a chance at it for this province. That's the issue, Mr. Speaker. And here is the result. In the last year, 2,172 more Nova Scotians gave up and moved away because there's no work. In Saskatchewan, Mr. Speaker, interestingly, 1,222 new people moved in to the province. Some of them, no doubt, Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. The government's decided to ban a new way of creating new jobs, even though the Wheeler Report said go slow, but go. In Saskatchewan, the research shows they're paying down debt. They are reinvesting in their roads, hospitals, schools. What's not to like about that, Mr. Speaker? That's what we all want for this province. So I'll ask the Premier, how many more young Nova Scotians have to move away before he'll reconsider his ban on future prosperity?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to respond to the one-trick pony. Mr. Speaker, the reality of it is, Mr. Speaker, to suggest, Mr. Speaker, that what's happened in Saskatchewan has been based on the issue of hydraulic fracturing, Mr. Speaker, is oversimplification. If you look at, Mr. Speaker, the immigration opportunity that the province of Saskatchewan gets that this province doesn't receive from the federal government, Mr. Speaker, makes it substantive. And Mr. Speaker, while we agree resource development is an important aspect of how this province is going to move forward, so is investing in the next generation of young Nova Scotians to ensure they have the skills they require. So is ensuring that we invest in research opportunities to keep young people in this province and drive economic and job opportunities, Mr. Speaker, right here at home. It's exactly why, Mr. Speaker, we're ensuring that apprentices get their first job opportunity here in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. It's why this government is the only government in Canada to be able to reach out an agreement with Alberta that actually tears down the walls between our two provinces, recognizes our educational opportunities, Mr. Speaker, and allows the flow of men and women to and from our respective provinces, Mr. Speaker. Under that administration, Mr. Speaker, they'd be focused on one result, Mr. Speaker, which would be a divisive one across this province with no basis of foundation, no science, Mr. Speaker. All they're willing to do, Mr. Speaker, is stand up in this House and look for something to divide Nova Scotians. We're providing an opportunity to unite Nova Scotians. Yeah.
The Just before we proceed to the next question, I'm going to respectfully ask the Honourable Premier to retract the reference to the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition as one-trick pony.
Okay, Mr. Speaker, the single-minded member across the hallway, Mr. Speaker, I do want to recognize the Leader of the Conservative Party, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, last November when the Liberal government signed the final contract for the Novastar ferry between Yarmouth and Portland, the Minister of Economic Development boasted to the media that he had made significant changes to the draft contract in order to better protect public funds. Now, Mr. Speaker, one such amendment the minister took credit for and clarified was how and when the Novastar will provide its $3 million contribution. And, Mr. Speaker, I will table that. But, Mr. Speaker, we learned yesterday that the amount that almost a full year after the Liberal government signed the final contract, the stipulated $3 million from the operator has not materialized. So my question to the Premier is this. Could he explain why his government has provided an extra $5 million to the ferry services when terms and conditions his minister included in the final contract have not been met?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, we are providing additional funding to that service, Mr. Speaker, because of the callous and reckless way the previous government went about cutting that service, Mr. Speaker. They devastated small businesses across southwestern Nova Scotia, and Mr. Speaker, it is going to take more than 4 months to restore the good nature and good service that we've become accustomed to across that region.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and that's pretty much the answer I expected, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, for the people in Yarmouth, and indeed the entire province, we all would like to see this ferry succeed, and Nova Scotians rightly want to know where this ship is headed. Thank you. Yesterday, for the third time in a year, this Liberal government and this Premier have taken out their checkbook. So, Mr. Speaker, with the Minister yesterday indicating that he was going to proceed with an audit of the Novastar, I would like to ask the Premier, what is the time frame for the completion of this audit, and will it be made available to the public?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we have shared all of the information that we have around this service with the public, Mr. Speaker, and we're going to continue to be an open and transparent government to the people of this province.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Minister of Economic Development also stated that no ferry service operates anywhere that is not subsidized by taxpayers, which I think isn't actually completely accurate. So my question for the Premier is this. Is the Minister of Economic Development's contention that public funding is required to operate all ferry services an indication of this Liberal government's plans to offer an open-ended annual subsidy to the Novastar ferry?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to assure her that every decision that is made by this government will be made on a business case analysis, Mr. Speaker, and will be made in the best interest of all Nova Scotians. It won't be put together on the back of a political napkin and a rushed decision like was made by the previous government.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have to say, before I start, I'm wondering if no-trick pony is parliamentary because, Mr. Speaker, no matter what the Premier says, this caucus will never back away from focusing on new ways to create new jobs for the people of Nova Scotia. Unlike the government, Mr. Speaker, one of the things that holds us back is the massive provincial deficit and the pileup of debt, which over many, many years has now reached a record $15 billion or $15,500 for each of us. Mr. Speaker. In light of that record, the government has done nothing but take an extremely go-slow approach to balancing the provincial finances. So I'd like to ask the Premier, in light of the 8,700 jobs lost in the past year, will his government reconsider their go-slow approach and present a balanced budget for Nova Scotians in the upcoming year?
The Honourable Premier.
I want to thank Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member for the question. We're going to continue to do what we've done for the last year is work with Nova Scotians to ensure that we move this province in the right direction in a sustainable way with a long-term vision to ensure that we provide a public education system to the people of this province, that we provide quality health care, Mr. Speaker, and the most vulnerable citizens of this province will be looked after. And at the same time, Mr. Speaker, we'll move this province back to a balanced budget.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Unfortunately, under this government, Mr. Speaker, for too many Nova Scotians, the right direction has become west to look for where the jobs are instead of here at home. The Premier has banned a new way of creating new jobs in the province, but he does have, under his control, the ability to get our finances in line because the deficit that they are running stands in the way of Nova Scotians and a chance at meaningful tax relief or growing the economy here at home, Mr. Speaker. In fact, the total debt already consumes almost $1 billion that in interest costs that someday we'd like to use for something else, like meaningful tax relief or better hospitals or schools, Mr. Speaker, but all they do is add more to the debt. So I'd like to ask the Premier, he's going to ban new ways of creating jobs in this province, will he at least balance the budget before the long date of 2017?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. We're going to continue to do what we told Nova Scotians we would do, Mr. Speaker, would bring this province back to balance in a sustainable way. Mr. Speaker, I want to remind all members of this House that it was the Conservative Party who's been boasting about balanced budgets, Mr. Speaker, at a time when the federal government was pumping more cash into this province than ever in our history, Mr. Speaker, and at the same time they were building, Mr. Speaker, an unsustainable future for this province. This party, this government, will continue to build a sustainable way forward, working hand-in-hand, side-by-side, by willing Nova Scotians who want to make sure this province sees its real potential.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure how many years back the Premier has to go before any of that actually matches reality. But nevertheless, we're looking forward, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotians want jobs. The Premier said no to one of the new ways to create new jobs in our province. He's saying no today to balancing the budget anytime soon, one of the biggest job killers that faces the people of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. But there is a hope. The Wheeler Report says the shale gas development could create $1 billion in economic activity for our province. That's $1 billion, Mr. Speaker, that could be used for meaningful tax relief, for balancing the budget, for new schools, for new hospitals, just like it's being used for the people of Saskatchewan today, Mr. Speaker, and we all want that. So I'll ask the Premier, in light of the fact that 8,700 Nova Scotians lost their job in the past year, how many more Nova Scotia job losses there have to be before he will either allow new ways of creating jobs or at least present a balanced budget so Nova Scotians can get on with all the things that they want to see in the future?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, during the election campaign, the leader of the Conservative Party promised Nova Scotians $1 billion in tax cuts without ever telling the people of this province where that money was going to come from. Since we've been sitting in this House, Mr. Speaker, he's come up with the idea that we would cap capital budgets or capital construction budgets in this province, Mr. Speaker, without actually telling any community across this province who needs that public infrastructure what he's going to do. What would he tell the people of River Herbert, Mr. Speaker, who is actually getting construction done to their school? What would he tell the very people of Spring Hill, Mr. Speaker, who actually are looking for some improvements to their high school? Would he say, sorry, we're going to cap that, Mr. Speaker? We're going to do this by working with communities across this province, Mr. Speaker. Community by community, Mr. Speaker, year by year, we're going to put this province on a sustainable path forward.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, we found that the Minister of Economic and Rural Development was writing another check for Nova Scotia, Novastar Ferries to the tune of $5 million. Now, the Progressive Conservative Caucus recognizes the Yarmouth Ferry is a vital link between our province and the United States. And we believe the service can be viable. No one has fought for the service more than I have over the years since it started. If we remember, the Minister of DNR was elected after me, after those folks decided to cancel the ferry. So, you know, let's just put the cards where they are. We know that there was many of us that worked very hard for the recovery of that ferry service. However, listen, we are concerned about the lack of transparency right now around the millions of taxpayers that have poured into this vessel's operations on how that money is going to be spent. So you know that the minister knows that there's an FOI asking for where those monies have been dispensed. There's a $15,000 fee to that to get that information. So all I'm asking is, can the minister provide us with an accounting of where the first $21 million has gone to Novastar Ferries?
Honourable Minister of Economic Development.
Speaker, I want to thank the member for the question, and I guess what I could add is I believe that it's very clear on October 8th and prior to that of last year that thousands of Nova Scotians fought against the decision by the previous government to cut the Yarmouth Ferry. Mr. Speaker, we have done our best to be transparent in this regard at any time that there has been amendments to the agreement or any additional funds that had to be put in. I have shared that with the media. I've shared that with Nova Scotians. Yesterday was an opportunity to, again, give them an update on what year one had been with 59,000 passengers using the Novastar, but clearly the business did not achieve the economic targets that was hoped for, which is why we were required to invest additional funds, and as well to discuss some of the challenges that we face going forward. Mr. Speaker, I have not seen the Freedom of Information request that is referred to, but I would certainly suggest that if it's specific information they are asking for, they may wish to amend their request to reflect the specific nature of the info they are asking for.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Well, to even simplify it a little bit more, I know the Premier has stood on many occasions now saying we want to be an open government, provide us with the question and we'll provide you with the information. And the question is, where did the $21 million go? What's the accounting for it? Just so we have a better feeling that we are going in the correct direction. Yesterday, we learned that there's still no plan for winter work, which is, I guess, contrary to some of the things that we've been hearing in the media. And when asked, the minister could not say what it would cost to tie up the boat for the winter. The province may even have to cover that cost of winterizing the vessel, and I'll table that document. Additionally, KPMG advisor with ferry experience will be auditing Novastar's costs, looking for savings, preparing recommendations on a plan for future years. And ST Marine, the company that owns the ferry, will be coming to Nova Scotia to meet with the minister. The minute the government says a contribution by ST Marine to ferry costs will be a part of those discussions. So why didn't the minister put these safeguards in place and commitments in place for taxpayers before he rushed to sign on that dotted line?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Mr. Speaker, I believe CBC quoted me this morning on the fact that suggesting that we could have changed the operator, could have changed the business plan, or could have changed the owner of the vessel, what vessel it was going to be, as I said yesterday, would be like sitting on a plane and on takeoff when you hit about 20,000 feet saying, I think I want to go on a cruise instead. A little too late to change direction at that point. Mr. Speaker, this process was well on its way. Even to get the boat in the water to start the season, we had to extend the start date due to some of the complications that were encountered. We tried to adjust the agreement itself. For example, Mr. Speaker, we made an amendment that the management salaries, that they would only be able to draw half of those salaries if the ferry was not turning a profit. That is some of the financial safeguards that were put in there. But when he talks about the winter service, for example, unfortunately, the agreement that had been put in place by the previous government assumed there would be winter work for the ferry and there would be no cost. Unfortunately, there was no plan B. Yesterday was an opportunity to tell Nova Scotians that that is a challenge that we may have to face, and we want to certainly hear from Nova Scotians as to how we should meet that challenge.
The Honorable House Leader for the official opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, and the added confusion, too, is when the Novastar Ferries announced that they would not be running past this last weekend, the long weekend, there was an opportunity. There was a possible opportunity for winter work. So it seems like that's not coming through, and let's hope that it does. The minister wrote a $21 million forgivable loan check while the company that runs the ferry invested no startup money. That was what the other thing we learned yesterday. And yesterday, the minister wrote another $5 million check with no assurances from the ship to find winter work and no commitments from ST Marine for financial support. In both instances, it's the minister's signature that's on the deal. In fact, he even bragged about it when he stood in this place and told us last year sometime, within mere weeks of being in government, our government was able to sign an agreement that would see the Yarmouth Ferry restored, and I will table that document too. Mr. Speaker, he's accountable, and he is, in fact, quote, in the ferry business. How many taxpayers' dollars is the minister prepared to spend, and will he release the information on how it's being disbursed, including the terms under which these loans will be forgiven at the expense of the Nova Scotia taxpayer?
The Honourable Minister of Economic Development and Tourism.
Speaker, I would suggest to the member, rather than doing a FOIPOP request, he should just simply go online to our accountability website where he will see the agreement. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, the new funding agreement that was signed is either posted, but it was certainly shared with the media yesterday, so no need to FOIPOP that either. That's already been made available. Mr. Speaker, we have shared that with Nova Scotians. This has been a challenging file, but at the end of the day, I would encourage the member for Argyle-Barrington to go speak to Mayor Mood and Yarmouth and maybe put that same question to her of how much more money should we invest in this service, knowing the impact it has had on Yarmouth, knowing the impact it has had on southwest Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, an area of this province that which had been devastated by the previous administration, Mr. Speaker. We are bringing back hope and economic opportunity to southwest Nova Scotia, to Yarmouth, and to the entire province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Health. Frontline healthcare workers are part of the first line of defence when there's a health risk to the entire province. We know some healthcare workers, Mr. Speaker, have received a one-hour educational video on how to use the new protective clothing that the province has ordered. But that equipment hasn't arrived yet, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, if additional equipment for nurses, healthcare workers hasn't arrived yet, what are nurses, frontline healthcare workers, and the screeners at the airport using today to protect themselves, Mr. Speaker, from this threat?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As the member opposite knows, our province is in an extremely low-risk category. I think that needs to be stated first and foremost. We know at the airport they have now moved to a stage two, a higher investigative process of anybody that has had connections at this point with West Africa. And so that those things are moving quickly, and that is coming under Health Canada direction.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'm sure everybody would be aware how those healthcare workers are concerned, and there's a level of anxiety knowing that they don't have that equipment yet that has been ordered. The Center for Disease and Control, or the CDC in the U.S., are world-renowned experts when it comes to diseases like Ebola, Mr. Speaker. Can the minister ease the anxiety of healthcare workers by ensuring the protective clothing on order would meet the approval of the CDC on what protective clothing healthcare workers should use when dealing with Ebola?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I know this issue is on the minds of many Canadians as well as citizens of our province, but in particular, frontline healthcare workers who may have to deal with somebody in quarantine. We know that what is in place are the best Canadian standards to handle the quarantine area, and those protocols have been developed. They're actually being rehearsed. We are having healthcare workers go through a mock-up whereby they, in fact, can learn the best procedures, because if there is some break in that process, we already know what can take place.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the world has turned to the Center for Disease Control, Mr. Speaker, in the U.S. To try to help alleviate and hopefully contain the Ebola. And I hope the Minister recognizes their expertise in that field. In 2009, when the H1N1 presented itself as a serious risk to Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, provincial healthcare workers from across the region created a unified front, signing a Good Neighbours Protocol, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table that protocol. The agreement broke down provincial barriers and allowed for healthcare workers' mobility throughout Atlantic Canada. So I'd like to ask the Minister, can the Minister tell us the status of the 2014 version of the Good Neighbour Protocol, given the risk of Ebola disease here in Nova Scotia and Atlantic Canada?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What is taking place at the Department of Health under the lead of Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rob Strang is in fact informing all of our regional hospitals, health centres about the kind of vigilance that is now required if there is even a remote suspected case, to move quickly into quarantine. And we've adopted here in Nova Scotia what, in fact, are the best practices that are being implemented Canada-wide.
Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, when this Liberal government cancelled the graduate retention rebate in its first budget, Nova Scotians graduates were handed the largest tax increase in the province's history. And at the time, the minister justified this $50 million tax increase by saying the program wasn't doing what it was intended to do. So, Mr. Speaker, I know the member from Yarmouth is very enthusiastic about having had that program cancelled, but I'm wondering, Mr. Speaker, if the minister still stands by her justification for cancelling the graduate retention rebate.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I do stand by my earlier decision. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Well, Mr. Speaker, through a Freedom of Information and protection of privacy request, my office received the department's analysis prepared for the minister on whether or not the graduate retention rebate was actually working. The Department of Finance analysis says, and I quote, the GRR led to an improvement of about, I hope the member from Yarmouth is listening, an improvement of about 542 persons per year not leaving the province. I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. Now, Mr. Speaker, this means that over 3 years, the graduate retention rebate kept more than 1,600 graduates in Nova Scotia. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is this. How can she say the GRR wasn't effective when, in fact, the program was doing exactly what it was intended to do, keep more graduates in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I think it's very important to remember that all members of the House are continually asking this government to save money and to manage well and to put our money in programs that work effectively. There was no question at all that this program was not only expensive but ineffective. If it had been working, I would have been the first to stand behind it. Mr. Speaker, it didn't work. We can't afford that kind of program.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in the last year, we've seen a continued exodus of young people. And in the face of the evidence of 1,600 students staying in the province due to that program, Mr. Speaker, it really is hard to believe that this government could ignore that. Mr. Speaker, the minister's own briefing note states that figures would suggest that there was a decline in retention rebates during the period of 2011 and 12 were likely the result of incomplete tax data, Mr. Speaker. So can the minister explain to the many graduates who wrote her to protest her decision to cut the GRR why she made this decision with incomplete tax information, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, when we make a decision like that, we also look jurisdictionally at other provinces and other places that have tried this. The evidence was clear across the country that it wasn't working and that it was an expensive program that didn't hit its aim. What we have said very clearly was that young people have told us, and I know they've told all the members of this House, they need a job. They're leaving because they don't have the job opportunities. And we are announcing the graduate opportunities job. Mr. Speaker, I think we all agree it is not the government's job to create jobs. We create the environment for jobs. That's exactly right. Mr. Speaker, we are deeply in debt. We're running a deficit this year of $278 million, and we can't afford to put money into programs that won't buy any improvement to our province. So, Mr. Speaker, we are going to be looking at programs like Graduate to Opportunities, which open the door to young people. We are opening the door in the private sector, and we're also doing our best in our own world. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and my questions through you are to the Minister of Environment. The most recent round of source emissions testing conducted at Northern Pulp revealed that the company was in violation of its operating approval limits of particulate matter. A confirmed Group 1 carcinogen on each of the tests of the recovery boiler and the power boiler. The information was obviously alarming to the residents of Pictou, Pictou County, and beyond. My question, with new evidence that the company continues to exceed the regulated limits of carcinogenic material, does the minister stand by his decision to allow these violations to continue? And are the residents of Pictou County well served by the Department of Environment's failure to enforce its own regulations?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the member for the question. Clearly an issue of concern for a lot of people, not just in her constituency, Mr. Speaker, but across the entire area of Pictou County. Mr. Speaker, with respect to standing by my decision of this government and how we regulate environment, you bet. 100% stand behind those decisions, Mr. Speaker. And just with respect to those test results that came out in August that we published earlier this month from August, Mr. Speaker, I just want to indicate that work was done during September between the point when those tests were taken and the point when we received the test results and posted them online. Again, you don't have to FOIPOP that information, Mr. Speaker. We're quite open and transparent, even on those issues and concerns that may be uncomfortable for a government to have to deal with, Mr. Speaker, despite how long-standing the issues are. We made that information available to the public. We don't hide behind the information. But there was work done in September during a maintenance shutdown. We expect to see improvements in the next round of test results happening this month.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for his answers. I do realize that there is work that was done during the shutdown to install Moto scrubbers that we hope the tests in October, November will prove that they have made an improvement, but I'm the one that's getting up at 2 in the morning with my son, who can't breathe. And as I mentioned, the power boiler at Northern Pulp also failed each of its three stack tests in August. And in November 2013, a press release was put out by the minister, and quote, he said, "We recognize that there is more work to be done to improve the air quality in this area. The latest directive will help our staff monitor progress at Northern Pulp very closely to ensure this progress continues, and I will document that, I'll table that document. My question, in light of the new stack test results, Would the minister admit that the November 6th directive has really done nothing to ensure Northern Pulp has made progress on its air quality impacts?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, no, I won't do that, Mr. Speaker, because the problem with selectively citing excerpts out of material information is that it's a little bit confusing to people who may read those excerpts. The member, if they reviewed the entire release, would understand that the context of that information was with respect to TRS, or total reduced sulfur, and not overall air emissions, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The amount of particulate matter that I'm breathing in and the residents of Pictou and Nova Scotians. This particulate matter, Nova Scotia environment permits Northern Pulp to emit greatly. It exceeds what is permitted in all other jurisdictions in Canada and across the U.S. If the next operating approval is to be issued by the Minister's Department in January 2015 and is to include more stringent standards that resemble other environmental policies for pulp mills, how can the people of Nova Scotia, especially Pictou, feel confident that this government will enforce new standards when its track record has been to ignore the relaxed emission limits already in place?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, I want to first of all address some of the personal concerns raised by the member there with respect to the levels of particulate matter being ingested, breathed by the member and her family and other residents. I want to assure the member opposite and all people of Pictou that we do have ambient air quality monitoring, that the air specifically that is being breathed in is not equivalent to what is being emitted from the stack. The concerns and the measure is the ambient level at the atmospheric level that humans do breathe. And on the basis of the monitor that's in place in the area, it has not exceeded the national threshold for those emissions, Mr. Speaker. So I do want to assure the member opposite and all people of Pictou that based on the data that we do have, Mr. Speaker, it's not presenting an issue of concern at that state. That said, the concerns around the overall emissions certainly is a concern, and we will be taking steps with a stronger standards in the next operating approval. But also, to the actual question, which is how can we have faith in the steps that we're taking, I think, Mr. Speaker, it's very clear that we drew the line in the sand in the August ministerial order where that line is, Mr. Speaker, with respect to failure to adhere to the standards in place and the directives issued in the past.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is through you to the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, as a result of the Minister's poor timing, the current ER accountability report hasn't gotten the attention it deserves, Mr. Speaker. Many Nova Scotians may not be aware that ER closures increased last year, Mr. Speaker, for the first time since 2009. My question to the Minister, why hasn't the Minister taken any steps or actions on improving emergency care here in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I am pleased that the former minister is taking responsibility for 7 months of those 12 that the report covered. But one of the areas that does need to be looked at, if we take a comprehensive look at the report, we will see that there's actually three or four ERs that have persisted over a long period of time that have become problematic once again. In fact, a number of ERs have made substantive improvements, and I believe in the coming year, with a provincial locum, to be able to fill some of those needs when a doctor unexpectedly leaves an area, becomes sick, and also we're having occasions now when it's a nursing problem as opposed to a physician problem.
Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, but I can stand on my feet and indicate that under our watch, Mr. Speaker, emergency room closures went down every single year. The minister opposite can't say that, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in 2011 and 12, the Roseway emergency room wasn't closed at all. Not one hour or one day, Mr. Speaker. In the member from King's West's first year as minister, the Roseway ER has been closed for 117 hours and counting, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the minister, through you, Mr. Speaker, what is the minister doing to address the increasing ER closure, in particular along the South Shore?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Roseway has become a problem due to nursing shortages in many of those cases. You will see that we will, in fact, be releasing a plan to make sure that we have both nurses and doctors to cover emergency rooms.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Emergency Department Accountability Act states that when there has been an ongoing pattern of closure, such as the case at Fisherman's Memorial Hospital, there must be consultation with the community, Mr. Speaker. So as I said, under the Act, that has to happen. So I'd like to ask the Minister, how many public consultation has he or the District Health Authority had with the community in Lunenburg and along the South Shore about the chronic closures that we see in the ER?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'm pleased to say that the member for Lunenburg has been monitoring Fisherman's Memorial and providing me with considerable information about the concerns of the community. And once again, this is a case where we have indicated that we will meet with the medical community, clinicians, and others to provide a direction once we take a look at Mary Jane Hampton's report to see what, in fact, is the best course for the future in Lunenburg.
Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, a CT scanner remains stored in shrink wrap in the basement of the hospital in Inverness. The Minister responding to questions, my questions here in the House, surrounding the process for the purchase of this scanner, responded with a veiled threat, and I quote, Mr. Speaker, I guess my message yesterday didn't get out, but perhaps if the member opposite is speaking for his entire riding and he doesn't want the scanner, I know other hospitals who would open their door tomorrow to a new scanner. So I know the Minister is well briefed on this topic. I know the questions are certainly been threatening to the department in that when is the last time we've seen a deputy minister, a former deputy minister, a head of a district health authority, and the minister himself chime in with letters to the editor? So, Mr. Speaker, prior to the delivery of this scanner to Inverness, were all of the company's standard procedures for delivery of a CT scanner followed?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the Cape Breton District Health Authority went through the process for procurement of Inverness CT scanner.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm afraid that they didn't follow the correct process. And I will, for the Minister, Member from Richmond. And I'd like to refer the Minister to page 32 of the manual that corresponds to the CT scanner make and model that was delivered to the basement of the Inverness Hospital. And it is in Section 2. I will table it for the House. It says customer system siting requirements. To ensure timely delivery and installation, GE Healthcare recommends the customer complete all necessary work and schedule a site-ready visit prior to the delivery date. So my question to the Minister, if GE policy states that deliveries are not to be made until the room is ready, why did government purchase a scanner only to have it sitting now in the basement of the hospital?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And sometimes through the procurement process, especially where we're able to use a prior purchase to get the best deal possible, this is a clear case of where the scanner was ready for delivery prior to the final adjustments that need to be made in order to house the scanner.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it's very strange because there was a big rush on to get the scanner and now the hospital is not ready to put it into use. And I know, Mr. Speaker, that the Minister feels it should consider itself grateful to have this scanner. The scanner was actually rushed in a solo cargo on an 18-wheel tractor-trailer direct from Ontario. in a big rush, Mr. Speaker, and I think it was meant to get there before the opening of the legislature. I know that another note, and I'm going to table this, from the product manual for this very scanner states, caution, service notice, an improperly prepared site, one that is a state of construction, can result in deleted installation date and or damage to the system. These are sensitive devices, Mr. Speaker. So it is clear that the protocols were not followed for this scanner. And my question, why not?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the member's concern for the proper installation, the proper housing of the CT scanner. Sometimes contract work can simply get behind, and this is a clear case where the CT scanner will be installed. Staff will be well serviced in terms of professional development. All those pieces, in fact, will fall into place, and perhaps in time, the member will, in fact, receive those letters of appreciation from our government that they're pleased to have a CT scanner.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Through you, Mr. Speaker, my question is also to the Minister of Health. Some of the medical staff, Mr. Speaker, in the Cape Breton District Health Authority is concerned that the authority itself is solely reducing services at some of the hospitals in that authority, particularly North Sydney and Waterford Consolidated, Mr. Speaker. The Health Authority responded yesterday saying the relocation of lab services at the hospitals wasn't a sign of things to come, but according to them, they are being forced to move the services due to a shortage of lab technicians. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister through you is, what is the Minister doing to address the shortage of lab technicians to ensure healthcare services remain in communities like North Sydney and New Waterford?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We know that the program continues to be offered at the Nova Scotia Community College. Sometimes, however, there are not students from local areas who want to locate or relocate back to their area where they could be employed. We know that there is a great deal of change going on in terms of lab service, but we know that citizens of Northside will continue to be able to go to the Northside Hospital for blood sampling.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton Centre.
Well, you know, Mr. Speaker, we see lab services being closed or greatly reduced in communities across this province, including places like Liverpool, Spring Hill, Pugwash, Parsborough. Now, before the Minister fired the Volunteer Health Authority Boards, the chairman from the Cumberland Board, and I'll table this, Mr. Speaker, explained, and I quote, "This is a provincial initiative being rolled out to numerous facilities across the province." And I will table that, Mr. Speaker. So my question through you, Mr. Speaker, is a simple case of shortage of lab technicians, like the Minister says, or is a provincial initiative being rolled out across this province?
Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'll do my best to answer, but I guess he can get the start date from the former Minister of Health, the member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Yeah.
We know that lab services are indeed changing. It's been underway now for a number of years. What I can tell Nova Scotians is that a high-quality service remains in our regional hospitals, our community health centres across Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton Centre on his final supplementary.
So thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess that tells us it is a decision of government to roll back these services, and not just simply one of a shortage of lab techs, Mr. Speaker. So I guess my next question will be very short. What service is that government going to attack next in our healthcare system?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. On April 1st, we will have the most progressive, highly integrated healthcare system that the province has seen yet.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act. Mr. Speaker, the government has claimed that the FOIPA process is independent, that they are open and transparent, and that there are people in place to address requests. We all know that administrators are essential to ensuring access to government information. And of course, there are times when the administrators of those positions may leave government and there is a significant gap. These are positions with a steep learning curve where accuracy is essential. We talked even about that matter yesterday. So while there are often alternatives or assistance, they may be occupied with other tasks. So, Mr. Speaker, my question, is the minister aware of how many vacant FOIPOP administrator positions there are across the government departments?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act.
Mr. Speaker, to my knowledge, there are no vacant positions because when a FOIPOP officer leaves, the task of FOIPOP within that department moves to another member in that department. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that was one of the points I was trying to make in my first question, was that sometimes those administrators leave, the tasks are handed to somebody else in the department whose task is something else, and FOIPOP is not their primary task. So, Mr. Speaker, I believe it is important to ensure a timely flow of access to information. That would be essential, I think we would all agree, to a functioning, transparent democracy. FOIPOP administrators do important work. That is why it is important that should an administrator leave their position, they be replaced quickly. Given that there very well may be vacant positions right now, what is the average time that it takes for one of these administrators to be replaced?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act.
Mr. Speaker, the province of Nova Scotia does not have a policy to tie people to their jobs. People have free will in this country and they can leave jobs as they see fit. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, with all due respect, that wasn't what I was asking. Obviously, they do have free will and they can leave jobs, but what should be important for the government is to actually make sure they're able to replace those people. There are vacancies. It takes a while. I know from the head of the Public Service Commission recently at Public Accounts stated it takes often an average of 3 months to hire somebody for a vacant position. So, Mr. Speaker, it is far too long to wait 2 to 3 months or 3 months to replace somebody in a position as key that would be in charge of responding to these access to information requests. The government needs a plan in place to be able to fill these positions quickly, otherwise access to information is compromised. Can the minister table in this House how many FOIPOP requests are currently open and awaiting a response? And I respect he certainly probably can't do that at this time, but could he indicate if he can do that at some time in the near future for this House, certainly before we rise from this sitting, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information.
Mr. Speaker, as in all aspects of government, when the province of Nova Scotia provides service to the people of Nova Scotia within departments, we not only have people providing the service, but we have support people as well. Any aspect of services in the government of Nova Scotia is provided in a timely manner, it's provided in a very sustainable manner, and is provided in a very efficient manner. And when people leave their positions, we have other people within departments that pick up the slack. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Recently, we've heard disturbing accounts of what it costs some cancer patients to continue their treatment from home. There are too many Nova Scotians paying out of pocket for drugs that would be covered, Mr. Speaker, if they received that same treatment within a hospital setting. So I'd like to ask the minister, can the minister tell us what drugs and at-home treatments are being considered for extended Medicare coverage here in Nova Scotia?
Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We know that there is a constant growing demand to provide a wide range of medications outside of hospital. We have actually started with cancer care drugs, the oral medications that now are a very, very big source of concern to Nova Scotians. So this is an area that we will be addressing. Very often, it's more of the process as opposed to people unable to access coverage.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I think it's important that the government continue to move in that direction. I was glad to be part of a government that started to fund palliative care drugs if they received them at home, Mr. Speaker. So we need to continue to move in that direction. Together, the federal, provincial, and territorial governments saved millions on prescription drugs in 2012, Mr. Speaker. Bulk purchasing of generic drugs is one way our administration was working to reduce health care costs for cancer patients receiving at-home treatment. So, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, as the Minister was unable to attend the October 1st meeting of the All-Canadian Health Ministers, what follow-up conversations has he had with his counterparts since October 1st about the Atlantic drug purchasing strategy?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. In fact, next week, I'm hoping, I'm sorry, the last week of October, I'm hoping to attend an Atlantic conference in PEI. In fact, it's a summit with the whole purpose to take a look at what will be the next area, the next, group of pharmaceuticals that we can purchase in bulk. And in fact, there's a lot of work already done in preparation for that meeting. And we are hoping to have something positive to present to Atlantic Canadians within a few weeks.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm a bit disappointed that the Minister hasn't indicated he has talked to some of his counterpart, because those minister meetings are important, and all provinces and territories work together to try to come up with solutions. So I hope that the Minister recognizes the importance to keep in touch with the ministers from across the country. Patients receiving life-saving drug treatment shouldn't fall through the cracks because they're unable to, or because they're able to go home, Mr. Speaker, for their treatment. So I'd like to ask the minister exactly when, if he can answer it, Mr. Speaker, exactly when can cancer patients who are paying for out-of-pocket at-home treatments expect to see changes that will support them with their care at home?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I do want to inform the former Minister of Health that I've been able to have some follow-up discussions, primarily with the Minister of Ontario, Dr. Eric Hoskins, as he puts forth a proposal to the federal government to at least start to look at orphan drugs with a national program. In June, we met as Atlantic ministers. Interestingly enough, two have changed since that meeting just a couple of months ago. But we will have a follow-up meeting in Prince Edward Island to take a look at the next number of pharmaceuticals that we can purchase as Atlantic provinces. And I know this will be a wonderful step forward in terms of oral cancer drugs. We are now in the process of getting a very in-depth look at what kind of cost is involved, what way can the logistics be improved, because it's very important to state, and the minister, former minister knows this, is that no Nova Scotian is denied oral cancer treatment. No Nova Scotian is denied. What we have to now help Nova Scotians with is quick access to those oral cancer drugs.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister responsible for freedom of information. Mr. Speaker, the Premier has said, and I quote, if the member opposite or their party has issues with getting information through freedom of information, bring the issue to the floor and we'll see what we can do. Well, let the record stand, Mr. Speaker, that I have just asked for the Minister to table the number of FOIPOP requests that are currently open and awaiting a response. But also, yesterday, we asked that the Liberal government explain the discrepancy between a Freedom of Information request made on behalf of our caucus and a fairly similar request made on behalf of the Chronicle Herald. The Minister of Internal Services said if the member opposite would like me to look into that, I can do that. Well, Mr. Speaker, we would like to take the government up on their offer. And since the Chronicle Herald has self-identified as an applicant, will the minister commit to tabling the breakdown for both fee estimates before the House rises at the end of this legislative session?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act.
Mr. Speaker, if the members opposite are having trouble with the Freedom of Information request, I'd advise them to actually call the department and ask them what they can do to put forward a better application. It seems like their application was a little vague, and if they nail it down, they might get the response they're looking for.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't know what we're supposed to do because the Premier tells us one thing and now the Minister tells us to call the department. All we want, all we're trying to do is to find the information. And if everything is on the up and up, then why are we afraid of being transparent before the very legislature here? So, Mr. Speaker, I have a couple of documents, Mr. Speaker, to table from the last question. Mr. Speaker, the Minister said of his own expense reports, if I'm going to be FOIPopped, I will look at what is the request and I will ensure that it is 100% accurate, and I also ensure that every part of the request is answered completely and factually. The information we requested was about spending decisions made by the Minister. So everybody's clear, separately, but along the same line, we had made a request for information about spending decisions made by the Minister of Economic Development. Based on the logic being applied by the Minister as it relates to his own expenses, it does beg the question. And the Minister, under the Liberals' interpretations of the rules, would the Minister of Economic Development have also been afforded the opportunity to look at the request that was made for the information and ensure that every part of it would be answered completely and factually?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act.
Mr. Speaker, I can't speak in terms of what the Minister of Economic Development would have seen or not seen. That question would have to go to them. I would ask the member opposite, if they have an issue with FOIPOP, they can table something. As I understand, nothing has been tabled until now. And if what they have tabled actually requests more information in terms of why they are not getting the information they're looking at, then we can look at that. So I would urge them to table exactly what they're looking for, and we will do our best to respond. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, I don't have confidence in that. We're just asking the simple question right before the legislature, and we can't get an answer. Yesterday, when defending his interfering in a FOIPOP request regarding his own expenses, the Minister said there have been mistakes made by other FOIPOP requests. We had one where previous Minister's expenses were accidentally handed out as the current Minister's expense, and I was just ensuring that the same wasn't going to happen. Now, Mr. Speaker, it seems very reasonable, but this process is supposed to be independent of government. So my question, do ministers regularly intervene in the provision of FOIPOP requests in order to make sure mistakes aren't made, or does it just happen when there could be personal risk or when there is risk to the reputation of the government?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the Freedom of Information Act.
Mr. Speaker, we're following a process of FOIPOP. The process is working perfectly. Thank you.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Last week, the Minister of Health said that 94% of people in Nova Scotia have a family doctor. While that's excellent news for the families that do have a physician, the Minister overlooked the 6% that do not. 6% may seem like a small number when we talk about it here in the House of Assembly, but that represents 56,436 Nova Scotians who do not have a family doctor. They are people the government made their campaign promise to. I'm going to bet if we asked for a show of hands in the legislature, I bet you a good 6% or more of us would not have access to a family physician. Now that he knows the numbers, does the minister stick by his promise to provide a family doctor for all Nova Scotians in the first year?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. And it's one that's relevant to all Nova Scotians because we all know that, in fact, our family doctor can retire, leave the province, and we're always in that state of recruitment and working to retain our family doctors. If the member checks real closely, I don't think it said in the first year, but it said that we would be working to provide all Nova Scotians with a family doctor. We will soon, in fact, have the forms going out to all of the doctors who are currently in residencies across Canada, and also as many as we can contact across the border that can look at obtaining the first 25 tuition relief programs and to continue for the next 4 years.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
In a quick poll, just sitting behind me, the member for Pictou West, the member for Queen Shelburne, they don't have a doctor, and I'm sure there's many other in here that don't. 56,436 Nova Scotians is the equivalent of Shelburne County, Yarmouth County, and Digby County combined. The emergency rooms are bearing the brunt of this failed commitment. Now, the ER accountability report showed in many areas of this province, the challenge of keeping them open has persisted and grown. The government needs to see the 6% of Nova Scotians without a family doctor as more than just a statistic. That's more than 56,000 men, women, and children of all ages. 1 year is a long enough wait. When will the Recruitment and Retention Committee complete their report?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The first phase of the report, which was one of our campaign commitments, was to work on providing 25 tuition relief programs for new doctors to the province, and that in fact can be a doctor who has been actually practicing in another province jurisdiction up to 7 years. We have a great initial interest in the program, and it should be out the door within a couple of weeks. The other recommendations will all be announced, and we'll all have ongoing work and a plan so that that next generation of doctors for Nova Scotia is starting to be secured, and I think secured strongly if we can get 100 doctors in place over the next 4 years.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. According to the platform, the Liberal campaign promised to ensure every doctor for every Nova Scotian was taken place in year one in a cost of $3 million. The Nova Scotian in need of a family doctor believed that in that commitment, and they relied on it. And a year later, 56,000 of them are disappointed. Since the government could not deliver on its own timeline, more than 56,000 are still without a doctor, and forced to rely on the overcrowding of the emergency rooms and understaff. I'll table the Liberal platform just in case the Minister forgot the commitment. My question to the Minister is, will the Minister commit to making the report by the Recruitment and Retention Committee public and maybe assign a more realistic date to when every Nova Scotian may have a family doctor?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And within the first 100 days, we started a process to put together a recruitment and retention committee. That initial report is with us now. We will be making the entire report public. We will also have the programmed plan for 5 years. In order to get your tuition paid for, there's a five-year reimbursement to a doctor, and that will be laid out within 2 weeks. Forms that will go out. We anticipate a very quick uptake for the first 25. Also, this year, we'll see the most doctors provided under the CAP program since it started in our province.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question for you today will be to the Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development. As the Minister may recall, in 2009 there were announcements made with regards to local schools in the Hants West area, one of them being Hantsport, and that project finally, after many years, is well underway. The other project that was announced at the same time, Mr. Speaker, was the Three Mile Plains Elementary School. Nothing to date has been done there. Unfortunately, we had a change in government in 2009, or fortunately, I guess, depending on how you look at that, Mr. Speaker. But today, here we are, many years later, still no work going on in Three Mile Plains. Now, I know that the school has expressed on many occasions, their desire to have that renovation complete, as have others, Mr. Speaker. But new direction was given in 2009-10 for the boards to decide how things would go. So I would ask the Minister today, is she aware of this project? I think she might know the minister from the day that it was announced in 2009. If not, she could certainly confer with the former minister, but I think she's aware. Has a new direction been given to the board on how they will submit, what projects will move forward?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member opposite. And, you know, late at night I talk to that minister because nobody else will talk to me. on a serious note, I think the member makes a good point that there was an announcement of an enhancement to a school in his area. That announcement was made in 2009. The decision of the new government in 2009 was that they would ask boards to resubmit requests for capital projects. Therefore, the announcement for Three Mile Plains was off the books, and it was the responsibility of the board to resubmit that. Over the course of time from 2009 until now, as the member would know, that has come in to the department. It came in several times during the 2009 to our time in government in 2013, and it was never approved. But it's not because the community and the board did not submit that as a request.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for the answer. I will table a recent letter that has again gone from the parent support group, Ms. Donalise Weinemer, from Three Mile Plains, re-emphasizing once again that their desire to have that renovation done at that school stands regardless of whether the board agrees or not, I guess, and you know, we'll stand here today and lobby on their behalf as well as Windsor Forks. I'm sure you'll have documentation from them in the near future. They would like that consideration given. Instead of a new school that was proposed by the board a couple of years ago, the community meetings were held and they were largely attended, very well attended, and it was clear what the communities, the parents, staff even wanted. So I would ask the minister, would she commit to reviewing this seriously and taking into consideration what the community, what the schools and the parents are asking for with regards to Three Mile Plains and Windsor Forks?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I certainly have received the letter dated October the 7th. I've reviewed that, and I will be responding to Dawn Swinemer as a result of her letter and expressing her concerns. But I do want to mention that, as we all know, there was a new school review process. One of the reasons we have a new school review process is because the level of trust between communities and school boards had eroded, deteriorated, and nothing very constructive could be done in that toxic environment. So we believe that the new process will help to bring communities together so that the needs and the concerns of the community of Three Mile Plains and others will be made clear to the board, and the board will understand and respect those concerns.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And again, I thank the Minister for the answer. It is very important. It's vital, actually, that the communities are involved and have some serious input on that decision. And I will also table a response that was written from the Superintendent of Schools in the Annapolis Valley District School Board, standing by their decision. But again, I would strongly ask the Minister's consideration. And she's answered that, and I accept that, and I appreciate that. But I'm not sure if she's received this or not, but I will table it since I have referenced it, Mr. Speaker, that their decision will be to move forward with a new school regardless of what the communities think. And again, I would like the minister to confirm for our communities in Hants West and all those, of course, around the province, that the minister is paying attention to what is going on and supports communities in and around this province when it comes to the education of our children. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I will get a copy of what is just being tabled now and make a commitment to the member that I will discuss with the board chair the priorities that are being submitted by that particular school board and all school boards to ensure that they reflect the needs, the concerns, and the requests of the community.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia's economy is in a tailspin under this government. Hundreds of jobs hang in the balance for workers and communities across the province have to deal with job losses every single day. It's been a year, Mr. Speaker, and already Nova Scotia has lost more than 9,000 jobs. My question through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister of ERDT is, can he explain to the House of Assembly and all Nova Scotians what his plan is to stop the exodus of jobs in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, one of the first things that we had to do as soon as we got into government was take the checkbook away from Cabinet and choosing which companies to invest in and which companies not to invest in, which was a clear... Mr. Speaker, instead we've now have NSBI, an arm's length agency well respected in this province, which is continuing to make investments on behalf of the people of Nova Scotia. As well, Mr. Speaker, we will very shortly be announcing the creation and the new board of Invest Nova Scotia, which again will be an arm's length agency which will be making investments on behalf of the people of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, we have been given a clear mandate is to work with the private sector in Nova Scotia to help create the winning conditions for the private sector to grow and put Nova Scotians to work.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I'd like to thank the member for his answer. Mr. Speaker, marketing the province is only one piece. As a province, we need to see tangible results with a plan. A plan with job targets that would give the province some measurable success. So, Mr. Speaker, through you to the minister, what were the job targets he identified over the last year?
Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, we have a plan. It's called Jobs Here. I tried in high school and it was bad. It was really bad. You know, Mr. Speaker, I've been waiting a year to use that line, so you'll forgive me, but, you know, Mr. Speaker, we've gotten away from the slogans, we've gotten away from the lawn signs, we've gotten away from the paraphernalia with slogans on it to try to convince Nova Scotians of all these lofty dreams. Instead, Mr. Speaker, we've worked directly with business and we've asked them, what can we do as a province to help you grow? And that's why they came back to us and they said, give us an ability to hire new graduates who do not have experience that costs us a lot of money. We've also heard from communities, Mr. Speaker, that have said we want to keep our young people at home for the summer, so give us an opportunity to hire more students during the summer, which is why we hired 250 more students. We heard from businesses say, let us get access to more students through the cooperative program so that they can bring their university experience into our business. We can allow them to get valuable job experience while at the same time bringing them back home. We've invested in more positions in that program. Mr. Speaker, that is part of our plan.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the only thing that that government has gotten away from is creating jobs. We were looking at the facts. It's 9,000 jobs to date. So, Mr. Speaker, identifying targets is what this government stood for while in opposition. I wonder what has changed now, Mr. Speaker. As stated by the former critic and now Minister of Transportation, and I quote, and I'll table this from Hansard, oops, which was said many times, Mr. Speaker. It's business. This might bring back some memories. It's business 101. If you don't have targets, you don't have numbers or outcomes. If you don't have anything you could measure, well, you don't have business. And you certainly have no business in business development. And I tabled that. So my final question to the minister is, given our struggling economy, why does the minister and this government have no real job targets or measurable outcomes like the former member in opposition, now the minister of TIR, was so strong about in this House? Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, again, we've gotten rid of the fancy slogans, we've gotten rid of the lawn signs, we've gotten rid of the paraphernalia that tries to convince Nova Scotians, a plan that obviously, Mr. Speaker, was not working. Instead, Mr. Speaker, our government has reached out to private industry and said, what is it that as government that we can do to create the winning conditions for your business to grow? Mr. Speaker, I've already gone through a list of some of the initiatives that we are working on. Again, the important message to Nova Scotians is that investments being made by the people of Nova Scotia are now being done at arm's length and not in the cabinet room or at one government place.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Municipal Affairs. Mr. Speaker, it is well known that thousands of Nova Scotians in rural and remote regions of the province are still without high-speed internet. That limits business and puts students at a disadvantage compared to areas that do have high-speed internet. Mr. Speaker, the Federal Industry Minister, James Moore, announced in late July a $305 million plan to bring high-speed internet to 280,000 households currently without internet or who have slower internet access. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is the minister able to provide today a list of communities in Nova Scotia still looking for high-speed internet?
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This responsibility falls under my colleague, the Minister of Economic Rural Development, and I'll defer the question for a response.
The Honourable Minister of Economic Development.
Mr. Speaker, as the members of the House would probably be aware, the rural broadband project started in 2006 under a previous Conservative administration. It was certainly followed up by the last government and continues to provide challenges as it did from day one and is still providing challenges today. Mr. Speaker, there are still communities, more importantly individuals, in certain parts of the province, especially in southwest Nova and around the valley, that due to the remoteness of their communities do not have access to that service. But I should point out that we are still awaiting to find out the exact details of how the federal money is going to flow to the provinces, and we certainly look forward to the ability of seeing that service expanded in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank the Minister for that answer. Mr. Speaker, the federal government's plan is to enhance internet speeds of 5 megabytes per second to 98% of Canadian households between now and 2017. High-speed internet opens new learning opportunities for students and allows entrepreneurs to grow businesses and create jobs, jobs that we need. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister, has the minister, either minister, been in discussion with Nova Scotia companies to see what their plans are about applying for this funding?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, we certainly recognize that when the broadband project was announced in 2006, its goal of having every Nova Scotian household having access to high-speed internet certainly was a lofty goal, and it was one that we certainly respect that at the time, I believe, the government felt it could be accomplished. Unfortunately, here we are in 2014, and we still have Nova Scotia households that either do not have access to any internet, or certainly the speed that they are getting is insufficient to certainly fall under definition of high speed. We are looking forward to more details from the federal government as to how this money will be made available to our provinces. We are always in close contact with the service providers that we have here in Nova Scotia. Once there are more details from the federal government, I have no doubt that we'll be working closely with providers in this province and anyone else who has an interest in making sure that we take advantage of having that 5 megabytes per second available to households throughout Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Kings North on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the federal government has been in consultation with your government as based on a July 22nd news release that says the maps of the Connecting Canadians website were developed to obtain feedback from Canadians and provincial and territorial governments across the country to identify those communities most in need of investment for greater access to high-speed internet. Companies interested in participating in Connecting Canadians are being invited to submit applications this fall. My question to the minister is the minister able to provide a list of Nova Scotia companies who have submitted applications for this funding that will eventually lead to additional high-speed internet connections in rural and remote Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
So, Mr. Speaker, if I understand correctly, the member is saying that the federal government has invited companies to submit proposals to the federal government for this program, and the member is asking me for the list of which companies have submitted proposals to the federal government. I would strongly suggest, Mr. Speaker, that question may be best submitted to the federal government for a response.
The Honourable Member for Northside, Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, yesterday I asked the Minister how he was going to address the growing problems at the Northside General Hospital. The issues at the Northside are many, and the Minister offered to come to North Sydney, but offered little in the way of solutions. For instance, Dr. Amanda Woodhouse told reporters that new blood testing machines being installed at the Northside General will increase costs and reduce the number of tests that can be done locally. So my question to the Minister, was the Minister aware of this, and why would he encourage the Health Authority to install equipment that will have a reversed impact than what was expected?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what I want to say to the member that represents the Northside General Hospital, Northside Memorial Hospital, is that those decisions are made with the health district in terms of the services provided, new equipment purchased, and once I do go to Northside to meet with the Chief of Staff, I will get a first-hand review of what is taking place, what are the needs and the concerns for the future. And if there are further decisions that need to be supported to make sure of the viability of a good range of services for Northside, that certainly will be put in place.
The Honourable Member for Northside, Westmount.
And Mr. Speaker, in addition to the costly new machinery, the Northside struggles with staffing levels and lab services. We were told today that lab services will continue on the Northside, but the concern is in what time frame, especially in emergency purposes. Dr. Woodhouse explained that because the new equipment is limited, some samples will have to be shipped by taxi to the regional hospital in Sydney. Nova Scotians, including taxi drivers, cannot be comfortable with this as the only option for important health information. So my question to the Minister is, does the Minister feel this is appropriate for such important health tests, and how does he plan to address this problem?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. To the member opposite, we know that testing of blood is undergoing a change right across the province. What we need to ensure all the citizens of that area is that they will be able to go to Northside for blood collection, testing, and results coming back. Is there a change with point of care testing? Absolutely. This is a process now that's been underway for several years in our province, and it's probably more the change that is, I think, of greatest concern.
The Honourable Member for Northside, Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker,
order,
I'd like to thank
please. Sorry. The time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to opposition business. The House Leader for the official opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to call private members' public bills for second reading.
We'll now have private members' bills for second reading.
Can you call Bill 34? And just as an aside, I was so caught up in question period that I forgot to do up the assignments here. But the assignments will be for the first bill will be 15 minutes, and then I'll make the thing for the second bill. So Bill 34, please.
We'll now call Bill number 34, Living Within Our Means Act, for second reading. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's a great pleasure to rise to kick off debate on this bill on limiting government debt. Mr. Speaker, as Leader of the Opposition in particular, it's